Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the May 2 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Brian Bastien. He's of Advanced Trading out of Bloomington, Illinois. Bill Biederman is here from AgMarket.net. He's in Spring City, Tennessee. And Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can listen to our program on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Dan Zwicker, I'd like to start with you this afternoon. What's on your list of items to discuss today?
Well, I suppose the one that everybody's talking about is cold and wet weather and delay in corn plantings and what kind of impact that may have on both corn and soybean acres and price ramifications. I suppose another one would be the dollar continues to strengthen. This seems like world currency traders want to own the dollar versus any other currencies and how that's impacting demand. And I suppose the last thing is what's the long-term future here over the next 3 to 5 years in agriculture?
And Brian Bastien from Advanced Trading on your list?
Probably the top of the list, Todd, is looking at strategy opportunities for the end user. We've seen a tremendous decline here, of course, in corn prices up until this recent rebound, as Dan said, associated with the planting delays we've seen, but I think that there's some end user opportunities here, whether you're an ethanol plant or whether you're a feeder or whatever the case may be, but the end user pricing is a good opportunity here. A flip side to that is that we're picking up still that the producer in the country perhaps, not universally, but in some cases has some old crop yet to manage, and that's been difficult to look at the last few weeks, particularly with soybeans, but there are some strategies to consider, even at these levels, that if you're holding old crop to consider, definitely want to manage and get control of those bushels at this point of the growing season. And I guess just looking ahead then to perhaps all the extending out into 2020, some marketing opportunities for next year. It's not too early to start thinking about if we do get some type of weather-related rebound or recovery here to look at some 20 pricing opportunities.
And Bill Biederman, did we leave anything for you? I know there's one glaring error so far.
Well, I do want to talk a little bit about the travels I've done in the last 2 weeks and the scope and size of this problem that's out there. I don't think the market's really aware of that. I'd also want to talk about policy. I think that what are we really pursuing in Washington? Is it an isolationist protectionist program, or is it more of a let's grow and have a free market system? We're certainly deviating from, seems like we're deviating from that, or that's the market's interpretation. And then, you know, how one policy in Washington is one risk management approach, and the other policy in Washington is the exact opposite. So without knowing policy, it's kind of hard to manage.
All right. So we've heard the word a couple of times from both Brian and Bill, manage, and what maybe producers need to do or ought to do. I think I'm intrigued, Bill, by your two policies function. One of them is probably trade, I would think. But tell me what you're thinking.
Well, I had conversations with about six different legislators over the last couple of weeks today Senator Mitch McConnell's office, and I guess here's the problem. We're at a crossroad. I mean, if you want to bottom line this, President Trump is either going to make an announcement, hopefully that we've got an agreement, and if you make an agreement with us, we are going to lower tariffs with you, we are going to increase your trading volume, and your companies and your government is going to make a fortune on the volume of transaction business. Or we're going to send a message to the world that says, if you make a deal with us, we will not lower your tariffs. that's a big difference, guys. That's a huge difference.
Those are two big things, and we've not talked very much about that, though you and I had that discussion about a week ago during the closing market report, as it relates to trade with China and what the policy might end up being once it is struck. And let's say that one will be struck, and your question remains, will the trade deal be with or without the tariffs? Did the folks that you talked with in Washington, D.C. have any indication of which way things would move?
Well, yes. Well, no. Basically, what I got from both sides of the aisle was that, number one, big concern, why haven't we lowered the tariffs against Canada and Mexico when we promised we would if they made us the deal? They made us the deal, of course, and we haven't lowered their tariffs. So that's a huge concern for about 9 Republicans who will not vote for NAFTA right now unless he does lower those tariffs, and a handful of Democrats, which if we got all of those, it would pass, okay? But right now, there's just no way. Looking at the Chinese deal, all eyes are focused on that. And the EU, Japan is on the back burner. But the comments made by the president over the last 3 weeks regarding China leaving all their tariffs in place, but maybe shifting some off of the agricultural sector would be fine with him. He's okay with tariffs. They're equal. And then his comment with the EU saying, hey, I like tariffs. They bring manufacturing plants to the United States, and then we hire people. Those comments, along with his nickname of Tariff Man, has really, really scared the marketplace. And the soybeans, we've gone down 90 cents in just a matter of days. It's a serious problem, because those who have been risk managing on the long side on the idea that we were going to eliminate an increased trade volume are now caving because of the increased risk that we'll leave tariffs in place. So we just don't know what is going to happen. I mean, there's been speculation last night that they'll drop tariffs on $200 billion. I hope they do. We'll see. I'd like to hear the other guys' comments.
Well, it's a big deal, as Bill said. Anytime you're talking about the magnitude of trading that we're doing with China and have done with China and what's taking place, I guess it's over a year now, about 13 months since everything went down in 2018. It's been a long process, and what evolves here, it looks like it's eventually coming to a head here, perhaps as soon as next week, is going to be setting the guidelines for a while here. I guess if I had a bias, I wouldn't be surprised to see him leave some type of tariffs on some level. I think it'll be a lower level than what they've been, but it's a tough guess. I guess the critical thing as I look at agriculture is what type of commitment would China make to what commodities, and for what duration? Is it going to be 3 years, 5 years, 1 year? I assume it would be some type of longer period, but we just don't know. It seems like that's the direction that I've picked up on the last 2-3 months here, is that it's going to be an agreement, if reached, would be over several years. But in terms of the tariffs, I wouldn't be surprised to see, if a deal is done, that they would be ratcheted down for China, but something would be left in place. How that logistically is done on both sides, I don't know. I've seen some formulas that have been thrown out, but it remains to be seen. But I guess my bias is that I think that there's a good chance something will get done. Not a guarantee by any means, but I think there's a good chance. But I see both sides keeping something in place here if it does get done. So,
well, I know it's quick to jump at tariffs and try to blame everything onto tariffs, but there's a lot of issues that's happened over the last 15 years or 20 years that we're dealing with here. It's just not tariffs and trade. Trump is trying to narrow the trade deficit gaps that we've had with all these other countries. I mean, Europe has been on, you know, we've about given everything to Europe since World War II, and they're moaning and groaning that we want to have fair trade. They don't want to have fair trade. Canada is the same way. China has been, you know, taking advantage of us for years with the trade deficit. I mean, we can't continue to export our wealth around the world. So Trump is trying to fix that. As far as what that does to agriculture prices, we can get into the weeds and probably have a complete semester on why corn prices are where they're at and why soybean prices are where they're at. I know it's quick to point to tariffs and trade wars, but the high prices, the high, very profitable prices that we had in the double O's is our reason where we're at is because, we had China demand and we had the Renewable Fuels Act and we brought all this demand into the marketplace during the double O's. We ran prices up way high. We brought all the lands out of conservation acreage reserve. We expanded acreage around the world. So now we're dealing with basically overproduction. And that's one of the reasons why we're where we're at. I know it's quick to point to tariffs, but tariffs is not the only problem where we're at. Whether or not we get a trade deal, I do believe that we're going to get a trade deal. Whether or not that has tariffs in it or not, I don't know if that makes a whole lot of difference. Our biggest problem is we're overproducing food. Not only here in the United States, but around the world for right now. And the only thing that's going to pull us out of it is some short crops.
Let me interject a couple of things. And I, both guys have made some really great points, but the carryover 2 years ago in beans was 438. It's doubling this year because of the loss in demand. Our production went up 130 million, but our carryover is doubling. It's going to probably hit 915. The government has it 895. Just China alone, year-to-date total shipments and sales are down 573 million bushels or 15 million tons. Now, we've gained some from non-traditional buyers, about 350 million. Net loss, though, really, what you can identify tagged to tariffs is 573 minus what we've gained non-tariff, non-traditional buyers. We're still down 223 million bushels, which is kind of interesting because that's about 6 million tons. And if we look at what China has bought so far versus what it would, versus what they told us they'd buy, the 20 million tons, it would take about 6 million tons to get them to where they meet the promise of that 20 million ton figure. So it's interesting to me that if we do get this agreement and China follows through and gets just what they were going to buy as a goodwill measure, we're just making up the losses that are currently on the books. With China would also get our total exports up to where USDA is showing us. If not, we're going to see this USDA number come down even more due to these trade disputes, and that will increase our carryover. Now, having said that, looking into the crop that we're hoping to plant profitably, this agreement could have a very significant 200 to 300 million bushel effect, not just on beans, but let's talk about corn and DDGs and ethanol and wheat. I mean, it could be very exciting for agriculture if this deal is as big and as huge as what Trump is saying. And then we're not overproducing, really. We're just producing to meet huge demand. But it's all going to depend, I believe, on our international trade. Look at wheat. Wheat was $4 to $15 a ton cheaper than any other country last week. And yet Egypt did not buy from us. And it's because of international policy. It had nothing to do with price. So this is a really big deal that agriculture is dealing with. It's I think it's the deal. I think it's what, I don't think funds look at the rain for the day, and I don't think the funds look at the stuff that we all look at every day. For the, most of them trade federal policy. I mean, they trade policy. That's how you make money. When I was working in Chicago for food companies and stuff, we traded policy, and we were usually right.
Let me follow up with you on a question on that. When the funds trade policy, do they trade a bias?
Well, some of them do, because I used to consult with some of them. So, you know, they identify what the policy should have an impact. I mean, it's just like what Dan was saying about interest rates and the dollar and things like that. You know, they're looking at how federal policy is going to affect markets. And then they position themselves with that. And then they have all these, you know, different, I mean, everybody's different, but they, a lot of them put, you know, X amount of weight on a chart, on a, this signal or that signal. Dan probably knows a heck of a lot more about that than I do. But yeah, they do have factors, and not all of them, the ones that I've worked with, they do factor in policy and they trade in that direction. I mean, who would have built this size of a short position in our agricultural markets, where there's, if they go from just what they are to the smallest long position they've ever had, they'd be buying 2 billion bushels of corn and 800 million bushels of beans just to get back to the smallest long position from where they're at right now. Who would do that unless they had a good handle on policy?
That's not a very good outlook for agriculture in that case.
Oh, it's a great outlook if we have strong leaders that work towards free trade and expansionary markets. And I'm not saying we don't. I'll just say it outright. I've been a diehard Republican all my life. But to manage farm risk, if we're going to have a tariff policy, you need to be bearish. Tariffs are bearish. If we're going to go for, let's get rid of tariffs, let's use tariffs as a leverage tool to eliminate tariffs and have free trade and bigger volume, that's a bullish. That's a sell but cover your upside strategy. Totally opposite. Do you guys agree or disagree with that?
Well, I think free trade's like a free baseball cap. There isn't such a thing as free trade or free market. I think that's all in the textbook. That's not actual in existence. Everybody around the world has tariffs. Everybody around the world has different farm programs and price support programs and subsidies of this and subsidies of that. So I think free trade is just, you know, in the textbook. It doesn't act that way. And I think what Trump's trying to do is to get the market to have more free trade. I mean, Europe's got all kinds of barriers. China's got all kinds of barriers. Japan's got all kinds of barriers. So why should the United States just roll over and let all those countries take advantage of us? So there's barriers all over this place. And And then same way with NAFTA. NAFTA's not free trade. That's just managed trade. That's an agreement. That's managed trade. And the winners are the ones that sit at the table. If you're not sitting at the table, you're a loser. So
that's right.
You know,
but
the higher
the tariffs and the higher your subsidies, usually the lower your producer price. Like if I subsidize a farmer $1 a bushel, the market goes, oh, I could lower my price because the farmer's covered. Right? I mean, that's how subsidies and intervention always works. You get rid of that.
Well, true, but yeah. Yeah, but we got all kinds of subsidies in agriculture yet. I mean, look at crop insurance, look at the price support systems that we still have. So, I mean, we don't have free trade. Farmers aren't making decisions based upon free markets. They're making decisions based upon their crop insurance. They're making decisions based upon their farm program. That's why they're always interested in farm programs. So farmers have always made decisions based upon farm policy, and that has always been safety net provisions. And if we didn't have no safety net and we didn't have subsidized crop insurance and just had, and people had to pay the actuarial tables on it, we probably wouldn't be producing the amount of grain that we are producing in this country.
Okay, so now the nut question is, if we get a deal and they lower tariffs and they increase trade volume, what kind of a strategy do we do for the farmer? Or if we keep going down the road we're going, and I agree with you guys. I mean, I'm super excited about what could happen at the end of all this negotiation. But if we end up going down that road where it gets worse, okay, tariffs stay in place, or maybe they even get worse. What kind of strategy does that mean for the farmer?
I think a guy's got to be prepared in either direction. For the time being, we've been talking quite a bit recently about the end user side of the business, and you hit the nail on the head a moment ago, Bill, with the size of the short position and corn, for example. You know, if we were to come in here, a combination, let's say, of a deal with China, some type of deal with China, and a persistence, certainly hope not, but a persistence of the rainy weather and an eventual reduction in acreage and yield from trend, then you've got a combustible situation to the upside, not runaway by any means, because we're, as Dan made the great point, we're not running out of anything right now. We're overproducing. So my message to the producer would be to be flexible and be prepared. To the end user, I would say get something done today. But for the producer, I would say if you must sell, if you, for example, if you're holding old crop and it's just gotten to the point where you just can't deal with it anymore, and that's certainly hopefully a small percentage, but we realize that there's some old crop out there yet, then you do need to get some upside opportunity looked at there or executed, a call option, for example, and buying a call in association with your cash sale. But there is a potentially big move ahead, either to the upside or, as you guys made a great point, look at the bean carryout for this year and what it could be for next year if nothing is done trade-wise. There are some bean carryout numbers you could ratchet up another couple hundred million bushels for next year. Now, that's getting the cart in front of the horse. We haven't even got the crop in the ground yet. But my point is, as a producer side, I guess I would conclude that you've really got to be on your toes here to be flexible, both getting yourself a floor in the market but leaving the upside open. Because if things break the right way, and we certainly don't hope that this rain and wet weather persists. That's the last thing anybody needs. But it's something that you got to start acknowledging as a possibility. With a combination of acreage and yield, then again, you've got that as one part of the upside, and the other side would be some type of deal with China. You got to be prepared for that. On the upside, but also acknowledge that if something doesn't work out and we do get the crop planted, for example, there's plenty of room to the downside, probably for both crops. I wouldn't just put it on beans with corn. Again, going back to the point that we're not running out of anything here today, that March 31st stocks report or March stocks report told us that for corn. In one way or another, either we underestimated the crop or we're not feeding any corn anymore. But regardless, I think there's some room for volatility in these markets ahead from today.
Well, I think long term we're going to $2.50, $7 beans. I mean, $2.50 corn, $7 beans. Now it may be sooner than long term. I thought we had until 2022 or 2023 before we went down to $2.50 corn and $7.50 beans. But if we have a great crop this year, we'll be there this fall, but it doesn't look like we're going to have a great crop right now. It looks like this might be a shorter crop, and we don't know how short it's going to be. That's still to be determined, but if we have a short crop, this may give everybody some temporary relief, give farmers an opportunity to price some inventory, some old crop inventory, and take a look at managing long-term inventory risk as we go on into 2020, 2021, 2022 or something like that. But no, I think overproduction is going to be, I mean, look at the advancement of yield. It's really kind of hard to have a short crop anymore, to have a low yield. You don't have to have any major intelligence anymore with the knowledge that we have in technology that we have in agriculture to produce a big yield. I mean, the weather is the only thing that basically really dings it up. And, we're in the beginnings of something right now. Now, how much that impacts it, and then what kind of weather we have during July and August is going to be another issue, too.
Bill, you wanted to talk about your travels. I know you've been through a good portion of Illinois, and I don't know how much of the rest of the Midwest.
Well, I drove last week up through the center of Illinois, up 57, 55, 39, all the way up. And I like to count fields, so every 10 miles I count 10 fields. And, boy, I'll tell you, from going up through Kentucky, it was all done. It looks beautiful. You could row quite a few fields. And then you get up from Paducah north until you get about 30 miles north of Springfield, and there's just nothing. Except, you know what I really think is the trade of the year? Sell the Sedgweed market and buy the corn market, because there's a huge acreage shift this year towards Sedgweeds. You know, it looks like swamp out there. and then from about 30 miles north of Springfield all the way up to Bloomington, it's improving. And from Bloomington to Rockford, it looks great. I mean, they're going to get it all in perfect shape when it quits raining here. But, and then coming back down, I went down 65 all the way through. And from tip to bottom in Indiana, it was just like from Springfield, South Illinois. I honestly could not believe it. I counted, I think it was 322 fields, and I saw one that maybe had been planted, but I couldn't really tell by the tracks. It was just an eye-opener. And then I had a client who drove from north central Missouri across 74 all the way to Indiana, and then he went over somewhere in Ohio, and he said it was the same thing going east to west. When in 1993, my wife and I traveled the entire flood area, I think this is much bigger. I mean, if that depends, right? I mean, if it stops raining, it's all going to change. But if it keeps raining, I think this is going to be a bigger acreage thing than anybody expects. Hey, I want to hear the guy's opinion. Will people, if let's just say it rains another 3 weeks, okay? Will people go PP on corn and plant beans, or will they shift their corn acres to beans?
I think they'll plant corn all the way to June 1st.
I'm with Dan. I think they'll go even further.
Yeah, I think go into June 10th. They may go to shorter, you know, varieties, shorter season varieties, but I think they'll plant corn. There's been a lot of June corn planted over the years that I've observed, and July-August weather still is a key. I mean, if you have favorable July-August weather and you don't have an early frost, you can still come up with some pretty strong yields. I don't think prevent plant works for highly productive soils, you know, that we have in Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, and that. Now, once you get outside and you get into the real marginal areas, maybe PP works. I don't know.
And prevent plant probably works there. I think that in those areas, Dan, that they're already using a different set of equipment and they're used to putting everything on at once. So the anhydrous tanks roll behind, right with the planter. They're connected to it. I think they'll even in those areas in the Dakotas, they're going to keep going. And when I talked to Emerson Nafziger yesterday, agronomist here on campus, RTK is going to fix the fertilizer problem if they can run, because they'll just put offset at 8 inches and they'll plant. They can plant and anhydrous in the same day if they can make it work.
I would agree. Would there be much yield drag, guys? If they went shorter day corn, would there be yield drag?
I would agree.
Well, I
think
you have to. You have to accept that there's going to be a yield drag. We're not going to continue on the record pace that we've been on. I'm sure. Yeah. Now and then that's a question. What kind of yield drag we have? And, you know, that'll be determined during July and August and whether or not we have an early frost, probably.
Yeah, I go back to the you make a great point there, Dan, because I go back to the 1995 was the year that we didn't get to plant corn here in Illinois, central Illinois, until the first week in June. Came up with great stands, but when it was all said and done that summer, we had a real hot, dry, oh, I want to say it was the end of July, early August. I can't remember, but it was 100 degrees, and then we had an early frost, and it kind of threw the kitchen sink at that crop, and it was a really subpar crop. But within the last 10 years, the years run together. But we had a year around here where we planted right near June 1st, and it was still well over 200 bushel corn because we had an ideal summer. That might have been 09. I can't remember now. It might have been might have been 13. But regardless, you hit the nail on the head. I think it's still the summer weather. Now, there's a point of no return at some point where you get into, you know, June 5th or June 10th, where it's just, you're going to get just such a yield drag, as you said, Bill, that there is a point of no return there. And I think that's probably that June 5th, June 10th, probably June 10th, where you just kind of say, this is not going to work. You're just going to run out of growing degree units and so on and so forth. But that's still, you know, over a month away. But I do agree, guys, with the comment that I think we're going to wait. And particularly here with this highly productive land that we're blessed with around here to plant corn, guys are going to wait as long as they can.
Just a quick note about late planting and the yield implication. Todd Hubbs and Scott Irwin did some data mining, looked back at the numbers. They found 6 years where 30% of the crop had not been planted by May 20th. On average, and there were five of the 6 years, so 83% of the time, I guess, there was about a 6 bushel loss, and they had an average yield of 170 nationally, or thereabouts.
Boy, that would make a pretty significant difference to the carryover numbers, if, depending on the acres, right? I mean, are we going to... Do you think we're going to get all 92.8 million acres planted, guys, or not?
Well, the question is, does then at USDA, I'm not a big fundamentalist, but I always know that the March report usually comes in low on acres, and I think there are some acres missing on that March report. So the question is USDA's numbers too low to start with? Because, you know, for the longest time, it's always, you know, the March report, where do the acres go? And then when the June report comes around, where did the acres all come from? You know, so there's probably another 3 million acres out there that USDA didn't really plug in to be planted to a crop. And the question is at what point are we starting from? Are we starting from 94? Or are we starting from 92, I guess?
What's your thoughts, Brian?
I have to agree with Dan over time. I guess if, underline the word if, you take the 92.8 at face value, that maybe we've just reached a point economically. I'll just play the devil's advocate for a second and say that economically, the acres that we've pulled in the last 5 years via previously the higher prices have reached a point where they don't work anymore. Perhaps 92.8 is the actual number this year. No, I don't think we're going to make that this year. We've got a number dialed in about 1.5 million less than that today. But I think it's going to be something that can change pretty quickly still over the next, if we just get a window here, if we get any type of window before, I think Todd made a good date. 3 weeks is basically, I think, May 21st, that period, somewhere around there. I think some people will just cash out and say, I'm not going to do it. I don't think that's going to happen in central Illinois here. I think guys are going to wait because, like I said, we've got some of the best land in the world. But I do think at 92.8, if you accept that as what the actual number was, no, I don't think we're going to make that number today.
Just as a reminder, last year we were at 88 million acres in March for corn. And we ended up at 89.1 in June. And on this date, we were still looking to be late. And then we put together the string of incredible weather that allowed the planters to roll. And we put 1.1 million more acres in the ground than expected.
We went from winter to summer last year. we did have a spring last year. I always remember that. We went from 40 degrees to 80 degrees. So you hit the nail on the head, Todd. This is exactly what happened last year. It went to a perfect seed bed, a perfect stand. But we never had a spring last year. We're definitely having a spring this year with the rain anyway. So
well, there won't be any.
Well, I certainly hope the corn acres get planted, but I'm just struggling right now with that.
Once we get it planted, it's going to be hard to talk drought.
For sure. That's a great point.
But it can happen. Especially if you believe that over the year, temperatures and precipitation levels normally average. So if you're wet and cold in the first 3-4 months out of the year, you got to warm up and dry up the last 4 months out of the year to make it an average year. But no, I would suspect that all the low-lying areas, you know, are not going to be planted. So yes, we're. I think in the long run we're going to have a much shorter acreage. But you know, we still have a week or her for the weather pattern to shift and turn drier on us. You know, it's kind of like 4th of July, no rain in forecast, and then all of a sudden the weather pattern shifts and it rains. So. Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna throw these numbers out to you. 92.8 million acres with a 177 yield, higher carryover than what government thought for old crop. You're looking at a carryover potential for this year, 2.3. Dropped 92.8 down to 91.5. Now I'm down to 2.1. I'm going to take my 177 yield down to 170. That's your seven bushels, Todd. You're down to 1.5. That's with no China agreement. Now let's throw China in there, okay? I'm going to jump over to the exports and add 350 million in for China. Most people think it'll be 500 million bushel, but let's just be conservative. Now you're down to 1.19 in just a very, very small and potentially realistic changes that we could be looking at. But hey, God's got a great sense of humor. We're just going to have to see how this weather plays out.
Well, and that's all very bullish, and that could very well happen. But in the meantime, though, South America will grow another crop in between, too, before we get to the next September, too. So, but yeah, prices can't stay at this level if we're going to be talking that kind of yield and that kind of reduction in acres. But what's it going to do to beans? I mean, larger beans and maybe even a smaller yield, you're still talking, you know, without China. I mean, when you're talking about a billion bushel carryover, we're at the point of no return almost. I mean, I don't know how you change that mix any without a major short crop in the U.S. and then follow it up with a short crop in South America. Then it's over with.
That seems like the biggest problem, Dan, is at over a billion bushels or whatever the carryout is, when you have another crop coming on the same size or larger every 6 months, it's got to be really hard to get rid of inventory.
Yes, that's why you're going to have a short crop, and you know that. I mean, that's what's always bailed us out in the past. I mean, if you look back at the mid '80s, '88 is what bailed us out. As well as, you know, pulling acres out of production, put them in the conservation acreage reserve. So we tightened up the acreage base, and then the 88 drought came along, and then all of a sudden, you know, that pulled us out of the hole. And then the 90s were fairly stable. We still had weather issues like we did in 93, and then we had 95, and of course we had the hedge to arrive fiasco in 96 that took corn over $5 and broke everybody. I think Indiana Grain went broke. I think Farmland Industries went broke. You know, that's when ADM bought Indiana Grain and Farmland Industries and everything, because all the farmers thought 240 corn was it forever. And they kept rolling those hedges forward, and, you know, everybody took it in the chin. And so we needed another one of those that's going to happen, and that's what's going to get all these derivative contracts that the grain, commercial grain trade is promoting by selling calls and doubling up in accumulation. So if we have one of those, that's going to be a total disaster. A short crop would really play havoc with those kind of contracts, I can tell you that.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you so much. Well, this is a great program. I appreciate you doing it for me.
Give us a call anytime, Todd.
All righty.
Y'all have a good weekend.
It was good talking to you guys.
Bye. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Take care.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program online on demand anytime you'd like. Our panelists this week included Brian Basting of Advanced Trading. He's out of Bloomington, Illinois. Bill Biederman of AgMarket.net from Spring City, Tennessee. And Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.